This is the August 27 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Mike Castle. He's at StoneX out of Kansas City, Missouri. Logan Kimmel is here from Roach Ag in Naperville, Illinois. And Chip Nellinger joins us from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, where you can find online at WILLAG.org. Not only Commodity Week to listen to anytime you'd like on demand, but also our daily programming, the closing market report, and the opening market report as well. Now, let's turn our attention to the marketplace. We have a new panelist this week, so we always let them introduce themselves. Mike Castle is here. He is from StoneX in Kansas City, Missouri. Mike, thanks for being with us. You and I met for the first time at National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City last fall. I'm glad you're able to join us. Tell us a little about yourself, please.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. I appreciate it. I'm honored to join. So my name is Mike Castle. Long story short, I was born up in central Nebraska, moved back to Missouri. So I kind of claim two states when I was young. Kind of classic story. Grandpa was getting older. You know, we moved back so my dad could help him out on the farm. Small family farm in mid-Missouri, not really an opportunity to do that full-time. Went to school at Nebraska, did my bachelor's and master's there. Always was an analytics kind of minded person, minored in math. You know, kind of wanted to find somewhere that I could actually apply that to something I care about, and the ag industry was a perfect example of that. So I started my career as a cash grain trader. I was a merchandiser, various elevators with Schooler. They kind of move you all over the country when you're young, and then traded cross country here in Kansas City, which is about an hour and a half from the family farm, with the Redwood Group for a few years, and then came over to StoneX here 5 years ago, more on the research side of things. Kind of was my main interest, but you know, when I was young, I was always told the best analysts, you know, have some cash trading experience, so went out and got that, and I think it was very beneficial. But yeah, I'm big commodity fundamentals nerd at heart, to be perfectly honest. So I really am kind of enjoying the new role, very happy to be doing what I'm doing.
Can you tell me, because you did the research, and I don't know whether you did the research on this, but can you tell me about the StoneX corn number yield and production, total production for this year, and what it is today?
Yeah, so it's a monthly estimate that's a customer survey-based number. I know Arlen is traditionally the one that gets yelled at for that on social media, but the reality is our Des Moines office carries that out. They, you know, will kind of be taking those surveys into account here in the days ahead. I believe September 8th is their target for releasing the updated estimate. But August, you know, the first shot of the year was at 184.8, obviously a fair amount above where USDA came in on the August WASDE there. So again, I think it's always kind of important to point out this is a monthly estimate. It'll be, again, coming out here in the near term and then updated again in October and November. I do think it's kind of worth pointing out, I know it's not necessarily what folks want to hear, but it is, you know, pretty solid historically speaking. Obviously, last year was a good example of that. That first print at 188, everyone kind of got upset, freaked out about that. And then USDA came in above that at 188.8. It ended up at 186.0, and then USDA's final was 186.5. So it does have a good track record. Obviously, again, like I mentioned here, compared to what we saw in the August WASDE, a decent miss. It does seem like, I guess, speaking generally, the overall sentiment is kind of pointing to softer yields. Obviously, Monday's drop in crop ratings, you know, if you just look at, say, like a simple 30-year regression versus condition index, for example, is now pointing into the high 180s, I think like 180.9. So realistically, kind of in line with where USDA is at currently. But overall, it does seem like yield expectations have kind of softened from where they were at a month ago. So I wouldn't be shocked to see a bit of a drop from that 184.8 moving forward.
Chip Nellinger, you've been listening to this conversation. I know you've been talking to producers that you deal with across the Corn Belt, and I'd like to get a sense from you and Logan both what they're telling you about their crop size and what conditions are like on the ground. So, Chip, what have you heard from them?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag, Todd. It depends on where you're at. It's a little bit of everything, and I think that was the take home I got from the Pro Farmer tour. If there was one word that was mentioned more than any, it was variability, and that's exactly what our producers that we work with report from all the way from the top of the top being maybe as good as last year or better. We have people that had the makings of a good crop, have been decimated with wind and hail that took literally 30, 40% of their production off the table in one afternoon. We've got some producers that have started harvest and were a little bit disappointed, thought yields would be better than they would be, and vice versa. The producers that thought they had a good crop, but it's coming out way better than they expected. So, Todd, I mean, you throw that in the mix, and Mike and any of these people that are trying to estimate crop size have their work cut out for them this year, because it is all over the board.
And then Logan Kimmel, as you've talked to producers and others, what are you hearing through Roach Ag's network?
Yeah, pretty well in line with chip variability. I've got folks in parts of Iowa thinking they're going to have one of the best soybean crops they've seen. Whereas here in northern Illinois, the rains we had throughout August were just tremendous amounts, record amounts of rain just poured there for 2 weeks. And that really took a toll on some bean fields up here in pockets of northern Illinois. So it's going to be interesting when the combines get rolling. But I think the frustrating thing for folks was how good some areas looked until August weather rolled around. And again, the rain, too much rain being a factor for some guys.
Okay, so let's do get the list of items that maybe we might want to talk about for the rest of the program, Logan. I'll start with you. Beyond what yield might be for corn, maybe for soybeans as well, what is on your list that we need to discuss this week?
Well, I think the last 10 days in the grain markets have been exciting in the last 2 weeks. But what's come with that is opportunity for producers on a marketing standpoint. So there's opportunities out there that need to be looked at that we just don't normally get this time of the year. It's a great great market moving, whether it be from the yield or the underlying fundamentals. But going over some ideas and some marketing strategies for folks here.
Chip Nellinger, anything on your list?
Well, I think the timing of this, I don't disagree. I think that's important to have a plan and talk about that. And, I think the timing is going to be key to producers, and how do you manage that? Meaning, we got opportunities right now. If crop is shrinking on corn yields, especially, and maybe bean yields, how much opportunity do we have out post harvest? Lot of decisions to be made. So I'd say the timing of everything, what's the opportunity post harvest? And what are the outside markets and the geopolitical standpoint have to say about things too?
And finally, Mike Castle, anything to add from your list?
Yeah, I mean, talking about this week, we obviously got our weekly export sales report this morning that I think kind of underpins everything that we're talking about on why we're, so focused on, these kind of minor differences in the yield side of things, is kind of because we have less wiggle room with how strong that demand side of the balance sheet looks. Obviously, 91.1 million bushels of new crop soybeans sold this week, massive daily flash sales in the lead up. So it wasn't a huge surprise to see such a large print. But at the same time, now you're looking at the strongest soybean export sales for next marketing year in 4 years. We're crushing over 500,000 bushels more than we did 4 years ago. So obviously, a lot of, kind of dovetailing on the geopolitical aspect here, kind of walking this tightrope of, trying to go after those supporting Iran financially without saying the word China, because obviously a lot of this strength is also driven by the assumption that we'll see them continue buying to kind of buy that political goodwill.
Okay, so I do want to talk about soybeans for just a bit. And I'll start with you, Mike, on this, because you pointed this out as it was related to crush, which has been really, really strong. That is on the back of the RVO, and the RFS, meaning that those numbers are pushing crushers to push their plants to the max and to add capacity in the current marketing year, the next marketing year, and one that's about to start, that is, and the two after that. However, SREs are being discussed in Washington, D.C., and there are some thoughts that the Trump administration may turn around for the 2025 year and issue some small refinery exemptions. The ag economists at the University of Illinois say that will have a direct impact on soybeans and soybean oil, and maybe into the billion-dollar area. What has StoneX been thinking?
Yeah, I think it's a really good topic to hit on because, you know, there kind of been rumblings about this for a while. And that is really kind of one of the, I don't know if it's fair to term that as like a black swan, but it's really important to kind of keep in mind how policy driven that is. And realistically, a lot of the things that are kind of tightening fundamentals globally relate to specifically biofuel policy, right? You want to talk about record U.S. corn demand, for example. A large part of that is the fact that Brazil is using so much more corn domestically because of their domestic policy support for ethanol. Being a big energy importer, obviously, they have the incentive to find cheaper alternatives. They are a massive corn producer, ramp up corn-based ethanol production. We're kind of the opposite story of that, right? Where that's really more pro, like, I guess, focused here on the soybean side of things. Because with, you know, the guidance that we had for this year, you're looking at record crush demand. You're looking at the first year in history that, you know, biofuel is the biggest demand category for soybean oil in the U.S. ever. So you're talking about, you know, either potentially changing what U.S. soybeans are used for, structurally speaking, right? Over 60% of our soybean demand now is domestic. That makes us less reliant on someone like China, which I think, you know, from a policy perspective is part of what we're working towards. And obviously, if we get these really aggressive SREs and you lose some of that incentive and you walk back some of that demand, I think it kind of goes against what we're trying to accomplish there, just to give, you know, effectively a handout to some of these refiners. Obviously, there's still a lot of question marks. It sounds like this is very much a like in-house fight, right? There are kind of two sides, one pulling more for the ag lobby, one pulling more for the energy lobby. Where does that ultimately land? Truthfully, I don't know. Maybe you guys have some more inside knowledge that you could share, because I would love to know the answer to that. But that is certainly something that I think could kind of change this story. You know, red hot demand has been the story here. But that is certainly something that could soften that up.
Chip, do you have any inside knowledge? I'm going to go with no, probably. go ahead and share that with us.
I do not, Todd, but it is a huge deal. And I think there's, you know, from my perspective and my bias, it's been such frustration with these announcements. And A, it seems like it's been more pro-energy and anti-ag, some of these decisions. And the timing of them, it seems like, you know, it's frustrating because that historically they say it's the announcement's coming Friday, and then it's next Friday, and then it's next month, and then it's 3 years down the road. And the I can tell you the soy oil market is extremely choppy today and for the last week or so. The chart does not look very good. So there's some immediate concern according to the way the soy oil market has been trading. And it had almost a 300-point rally today off of a rumor of some numbers. So I'm not sure if the rumors are going to prove to be true, if there's some inside knowledge. I certainly don't have it, Todd, or I'd let everybody know.
Okay, so it is something we have to watch closely, something not announced, something that is almost trial balloon, or as you said, there's an infight and they're working through it. And frankly, the ag industry has been through this a couple of times with SREs, and they may just be out in front of it and screaming pretty loud at this point about it. Given that, it does mean, Logan Kimmel, that when producers look at the price of soybeans for the fall, they probably need to consider what has to be paid in the fall for next year's inputs? And if soybeans are something they should sell, what are you telling them?
Yeah, I look at the bean market, and whether it be from headlines or fundamental reasons, we've seen a market that's had huge dips, huge breaks, but yet here we are back up into near the highs on new crop soybeans. So it's been a trending steady market. I think if producers have to have income, cash flow, making sales on strength in the bean market, especially if you don't store your beans, what a great timing for this to have happened in the market rally. I don't know though. When I look at the bigger picture, soybean, like a weekly and a monthly, might be worth considering if you are making some sales, a strategy might be keeping some upside. I think these beans might be breaking out from a technical standpoint, kind of comes in and buys, continues to buy, replacing cash sales with like a call option. This might be a good year to consider that. There might be some upside in the soy market, and that goes for corn too. So good timing for, again, keep in mind, making the cash sale, especially if you need to, right before harvest, but maybe keep an upside in a flexible manner throughout the winter would be our idea.
Hey, Mike, and stick with soybean for just a moment. We'll get back to the corn. But when you think about soybeans and the potential to go either way still, how much upside might there be given domestic usage, build out of capacity for the crop that's about to be harvested? And probably through most of, more than half of it will be sold more than likely by January, February, but sort of that, and then 70 or 75% by the time we get to March timeframe. How should producers think about it?
Yeah, so I think, you know, obviously, like the other folks have mentioned, we've certainly seen really nice sales opportunities. That's not to say that we can't see additional, upside from this point. But again, I think it's a really good point that we touched on those SREs, because that is something that could really act as kind of a, I guess, blunting force to, you know, so to speak. Or the other side of that, obviously, again, that is somewhat risky, is these massive purchases from China. Again, from an economic perspective, that really is not penciling. In theory, like, obviously, they already have really, really high front-end stocks. South America is cheaper than us. This is purely, you know, a political maneuver to kind of, you know, gain some goodwill, to gain some more access to the U.S. consumer market. But again, especially as we're kind of talking about potentially targeting these folks who are, quote unquote, enabling Iran, giving them the financial lifeline, China is really, again, the elephant in the room there. They're far and away Iran's top trading partner, but we're not saying that directly, so we don't impact these negotiations. But if we did do that, if we did see those relations deteriorate, if you did see that incentive to kind of buy that political goodwill by overpaying a bit on soybeans go away, obviously you're talking about a very different story, right? Because then you have to be much more competitive versus South America, who's coming off a couple years in a row of record crops. But again, kind of going back to what you're asking here, from the technical perspective, obviously we've already taken out the previous high for the move. It kind of, you know, begs the question of what comes next. I think it's going to be really important to kind of see how we handle these next, honestly, just few closes, from the perspective of a lot of this move kind of being driven by big fund buying. The funds obviously are quite long at this point. And when do they kind of say enough is enough and start taking some profits, start driving some pullbacks? Or if you see some headlines that would suggest tensions between the U.S. and China kind of reaccelerating, scaring some of those longs out of the market, what does that do to these new levels that we've seen? Do we see those, you know, new highs that we've made start to act as support or start to act as resistance? Obviously, just looking at new crop beans, November, I should say, from a pure psychological perspective, anytime we kind of approach these big, you know, specific dollar targets, that seems to kind of act as something of a barrier. $13 obviously is not that far off the table now, 32 cents from where we closed today. again, it's, I hate to kind of, you know, not give a firm answer, but I think it's really important to point out how many unknowns there are specifically on that demand side of things. I think the corn side, maybe supply is a little more of the unknown, but specific to beans, again, you have this risk of U.S.-China relations, purchases that are being made specifically for politics, not economics. That's risky. That doesn't mean they can't buy that full 25 million tons, because if you think about it, they could gain over $100 billion in resumed access to the U.S. consumer market in their own exports. Why would they care if they overpaid by half a billion on some soybeans, right? It's really kind of a rounding error. But again, those SREs, that is the kind of stuff that makes me nervous. You want to talk frustrations, that's the same as, you know, allowing year-round sales of E15, for example. We watch places like Brazil immediately bump up to E32, and we're pulling teeth and having to use emergency waivers just to sell E15 year-round. So the policy side is certainly a risk. I do think the energy lobby is, you know, consistently kind of more powerful than the ag lobby, unfortunately.
Chip, on the note with China, and you have been talking about them using purchases for political capital and buying beans that are priced higher than what they could probably import them from Brazil from. And I'm wondering how worried you might be about cancellations at this time. And then just about the upside on domestic usage as well. If the SREs are floated and then just come down on the ag side. So because losing both would be terribly bad. Losing one, probably the SREs, would be far worse maybe than losing the sales to China. But I'm trying to figure out how you manage that risk for producers and what you tell them.
Yeah, Todd, I think this kind of speaks towards what I was talking about earlier on the timing. You know, in the short run, if we have a 53 bushel yield, beans may be about as far as they need to go for the time being. I think China has, as China often does, has the makings of a very good trade, meaning clear back, you know, several months ago on the lows. I strongly suspect they were buying futures ahead of the anticipation of them buying physical bushels. And the physical bushels that they have purchased, now they can sit back and say, you know, A, I'm getting some political capital from this. B, the pretty well publicized, you know, super El Nino, if that produces a problem in Brazil, then China just goes ahead and takes our beans and maybe they buy some additional beans. So China's in the driver's seat right now, in my opinion, as far as beans go. I think that is the unknown. And I have to assume a couple things. A, that given, you know, the environment for renewable fuels and the biodiesel side, that even there's a little disappointment, they were still going to get some really good demand on that side. I don't think it just goes away. I think China stays there for quite a while. If there is any flare up in Brazil with this El Nino, and they have many areas that are very dry right now, if that continues into their growing season, the upside on beans is frighteningly high. It could be $14, $15 very easily. Now, I'm not suggesting you hold beans until we see 15. I just think that there's a conversation to be had on how do you manage that. If you need to move beans at fall, you're going to want some ownership longer term, I think. So I think that there's more upside potential than downside, but certainly in the short run, we've got this summit coming up between President Trump, President Xi of China. That's going to be like late September. We've got September crop report and harvest starting. There could be some short run setbacks. And so producers, I think, really need to sharpen the pencil and get a plan in place to protect against what could be some really extreme volatility over the next few months in the bean market.
Mike, I want to come back to you for just a second because I've been wondering about China's import of U.S. soybeans that coincides with the auction of their inventories of soybeans on hand, and whether that really has an impact on global stocks or not, or if it is just flat.
I think China auctioning these reserves is really just a sign of them preparing to bring in U.S. beans to refill those reserves. You know, obviously, they're extremely cagey about what they keep. It's always kind of a guessing game to know what China's true stocks are like, but we know that they carry these immense stockpiles of all their commodities. And U.S. beans just store better, right? They're typically higher quality, shipped a bit drier, they keep longer. I know anyone at the elevator level would tell you they don't want to carry beans for, you know, more months than they have to, let alone for several years. So it's always good to cycle those stocks out and, again, replace them with the new shipments that are coming. So, you know, from that perspective, sometimes you can see them pay a bit of a premium to get some of those beans to refill reserves. But at the same time, from a, I guess, longer term fundamental picture, you are looking at a conscious effort of them to kind of walk back their own domestic hog herd, which is, you know, kind of a big driver of a lot of their soy demand, is the soy meal side of things, specifically to feed their pork sector that, you know, at one time was expanding very rapidly, is kind of losing favor, so to speak. But again, I don't know that it's necessarily a sign of them needing a whole lot more supply. In my opinion, it's probably more a reflection of them trying to free up some space to refill those reserves with the stuff that we're sending there.
Logan Kimmel, turn your attention to corn. Is there carry in the market that producers can take advantage of in some way, whether that's for corn that they store on farm or off farm?
Yeah, there is. We're starting to see some attractive levels here out, you know, the mid fives out to the spring, summer here of next year. I don't know. One thing to watch, though, is actually the December 26th, December 27 corn spread. That to me is maybe signaling, if you're looking at spreads or carry, a little more indication of maybe where this market goes. With that spread hitting, taken out the high from March at 10 cents, settled at 8. If that these spreads start trading north of 10, that might gain a little momentum and more buying interest in this crop, front month crop. And usually that's associated with stronger markets. So, there is some selling opportunities if you got the bins. But you start seeing the market go inverted in this corn, I think that could lead to higher prices and a better market through the winter.
And what are you telling producers, again, Logan, about marketing their corn crop?
I think you got to reward the rallies that we've gotten, especially in the last 10 days. Anytime the market goes straight up like it has, and you got to get caught up, especially if you're in an area that you know your crop or have a better feel for the size of your crop, to increment up your sales, especially if you need bin space, cash flow. That's what we would be recommending you do here. If we see a 20 or 30 cent correction or break in the market, just down to some trend lines and moving averages, that would be an area you'd want to consider. The bigger term, longer term picture in this market, potentially for higher, where keeping that upside and that flexibility to participate in a market would be our recommendation. Using the strength, the funds have been piling in long on these grains here most recently in the last 2 weeks. So there's any fundamental news can change, a tweet can change, and they could sell or shed their length. But what if they just decide to hold on to it? I agree with Chip. I think the South American growing season could lead to some explosive prices if they have any issues. So again, cash marketing on these rallies and folks that want to participate longer with upside with a long position on the board is what we're recommending.
Let's get a final word from each of you. Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, what is your final word for the day?
Yeah, I think I'd probably parrot what Logan just said in the fact that don't stare a gift horse in the mouth, right? We got opportunities right now, good areas to catch up. If crop continues to shrink on corn and we see yields closer to pro farmer at 173, we're going to spend some time post-harvest well north of $6. If we're closer to 180 or 181, we may be, long ways towards where we need to be on prices. So expect some volatility. reward it, lock prices in, but have some upside ownership in case the geopolitical side. We haven't talked much about wheat, but it's a very unique situation with Russia and Ukraine. That's exploded higher this week. It's tied at the hip to corn. So there's so many things on the bull side that could hit. Manage risk, lock in profits, but maintain some ownership in case several more of these bullish items hit over the next few months.
Mike Castle from StoneX, your final thoughts for the day?
Yeah, I think the other guys brought up a pretty good point in talking about the risk of this super El Nino looking into 2027. You know, obviously the upfront focus on the soybean side of things because they'll be planting here starting next month. But just based on existing long-term forecasts and even looking at some of our, you know, strong analog years like 2015, the bigger risk to Brazilian production, or at least the bigger deviation below trend yields in that strong El Nino year, was on the corn side. So whether or not that actually results in a production shortfall is one thing, but as we're talking about, you know, tying this again back to China, they are cognizant of that. That is something that they watch closely. I happen to sit by the guy at StoneX who writes our China Direct. He's from China, has connections in the space, and that is something that they're looking at actively. So even without actually seeing that realized impact, that could influence some buying decisions that could make them want to protect themselves. Again, that could be part of why we're seeing these soybean purchases. And then again, this thing that we haven't really touched on is the potential to see them start making progress on those non-soy ag purchases. Again, you talk about this risk of a strong El Nino for 27. Could that incentivize them to want to buy some corn? Obviously not really a story until we get deeper into the season. That growing season, at least the Safrina side, is a ways away, but something to kind of keep in your mind here moving into 2027.
I remember vividly the summer of 2015, a good crop on hand in June and July, and a price that just kept going up. And we did not grasp at the time that it was the exportable corn that was not there from Brazil. Logan Kimmel, your final thoughts for today.
Chip made mention of it, but I think it's important to bring up again that the wheat market and the global tensions, Russia and Ukraine, they don't like each other. This past week has shown there is going to be continued, disruptions throughout that region in the Black Sea. And I think that's going to provide strength in the wheat. I think wheat could be a driver. This isn't going to go away. This is part of our world now. And I think longer term, that's something to watch. More disruptions in the Black Sea could be a driver for wheat and a driver for the grain complex.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org, where you'll also find the opening market report and the daily closing market report as well on demand. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Mike Castle of StoneX, Logan Kimmel from Roche Ag, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.